Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
And this ball hit out towards where that building will be. It is off the scoreboard and gone. Cabrera's second bomb of the night. He is straight mashing.
Yeah, it's a nice swing that Daniel Cabrera has, and he's not giving up any at-bats here. 2-3.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is the man behind the glass. The man behind the man. He's the one that keeps this show going. Happy Friday to you. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. We do have a jam-packed show for you today. We got a NBA playoff talk coming up here at 6:32 with Daniel Brown of The Athletic. He's going to give us his insight on the Golden State Warriors and how the Kevin Durant injury affects them, if their dynasty could possibly be derailed. We'll also be talking with Eric Narcisse from the Daily Advertiser. High school state championships, semifinals for baseball have been washed out. All of yesterday's games were washed out, today's games as well, due to the severe weather that we're experiencing throughout the entire state of Louisiana, from central to southwest, washed everything out. State championships, the semifinals, will start back up on Sunday, then state championships early next week. We'll talk about that with Eric Narcisse. Programming reminder, STM will take on St. Charles Catholic in the Division II semifinals on Sunday at 6 o'clock. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll have Astros on in the afternoon beforehand from 1 to 5, and then we'll have Danny Jones and company calling the St. Thomas More Cougars state semifinal game on Sunday, first pitch, 6 o'clock. We'll talk to our boy Barry as well. Barry Hurst, the Saints rookie minicamp begins. Barry's down there covering it. Want to get his insight on what he's looking for and maybe some standouts, some guys that can maybe possibly turn some heads during this early, way too early training camp kind of period for the New Orleans Saints. Tim Buckley from the Daily Advertiser will join us to kick off the third hour. He's going to cover all the bases with the Raging Cajuns. Baseball, football, and men's basketball. Lots of little tidbits of news have been occurring this week. So we'll catch up with our good friend Tim. And then we'll close out the show with Tyler Nunez, as we always do, from Tiger Rag. Also, Cody and I will keep you updated. Please be careful out there today with the severe weather. Schools, public schools, are canceled for all of Acadiana. Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Evangeline, Acadia, across the board. Vermilion, Iberia, the diocese has come out, canceled school for Catholic schools. Daycares are closed, the whole nine yards. So if you don't need to be out on the road, do not do so. Be safe if you do have to go out there and travel and have to maneuver through the severe weather that we're experiencing. Well, you'll keep you updated if it gets worse or if anything else occurs. But we'll start off this jam-packed edition of RP3 and Company talking about LSU baseball. Fourth loss in a row, and this one is just as lopsided as the other one at Alex Box Stadium against Louisiana Tech. On the road at Arkansas, the highlight of the game was Daniel Cabrera coming up with not one but two powerful home run shots. But that was all the life that the Tigers could muster in Fayetteville last night. And they got embarrassed. Arkansas hit five home runs Thursday night in the 14-4 win there at Baum Walker Stadium. Arkansas, of course, improves themselves to 38-12 overall, 18-7 in the SEC. LSU falls to 30-20 overall and 14-11 in conference play. The teams will resume the series tonight with Game 2 at 6:30. Cody, you asked if Isaiah Campbell was Arkansas's ace of the staff. I think that can be put to rest. I believe we can go ahead and just say
it didn't even start that way though, because you know there's a leadoff solid base hit,
I know.
And then Zach Watson moves him over, and then you get the run in, and it was like, all right,
there we
go, the ball, okay, play a little ball tonight,
yeah, and we're getting to their ace, here it comes,
right, and I even asked my wife, I was like, Kaylee, I was like, how long, this is before the game started, as they were coming and doing the intro, I was like, how long do you think before I'm cussing and yelling at this TV for LSU baseball? She looks at me, she goes, one inning. I was like, no, ye of little faith. And then LSU gets a run. I was like, see, Kaylee, you're wrong. About an inning later, I was like, what are we doing? What is the problem? Sorry. I don't know where half of my stuff just went.
I don't want LSU to be bad, but your frustration with them is just gives me loads of energy.
Actually, if I'm going to be completely like, yeah, I'm frustrated, but that was obviously a bit of a gimmick there.
But yesterday
felt more like, as opposed to the midweek game where they got just stomped and it was like, huh, you guys don't even care, do you? As opposed to that feeling, this game yesterday felt more like
you're not on the same level.
Sometimes that other team just has a game. When the other team is hitting home run after home run after home run after home run, and then your pitcher is throwing a walk after walk. And when he does throw a strike, it's a big meatball down the middle of the plate. Sometimes you have a bad day and the other guys have a good day. And that's how even in major leagues you see these 20-something to 6 scores in games here and there. So yesterday I was mad, but it did actually kind of just feel like, you know what, tonight's just their night. Not to say LSU can't come back and win the next two games, but last night was one of those things where you chalk that one up to baseball, they win.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. And it did look like LSU was going to start off on the right foot. You know, they grabbed the 1-0 lead in the top of the first when Antoine DePlanis, Lafayette High product, drove home shortstop Josh Smith with that RBI double. And you're like, okay, here you go. And then you're like, nope, no, 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 no. Because then Campbell went out there and limited LSU to 2 runs on 4 hits in 6 innings with only 1 walk and 4 strikeouts. So that's not great stuff. Still gave up a couple runs, only had 4 Ks. He's a strikeout pitcher. But still, Mikhail Hilliard, LSU starter, allowed 6 runs, Cody, on 7 hits in just 3 innings. 6 runs, 7 hits, 2 walks in 3 innings. The Razorbacks ended the game collecting 15 hits, including 5 home runs, increasing their SEC leading total to 69 dingers. Daniel Cabrera did pace LSU at the plate with a pair of solo home runs, increasing his team leading total to 11. So he had a good game. This is what Paul Manera had to say afterwards. We felt good about the way we were competing early in the game, but Arkansas was able to pull away with a couple of big innings. Our focus right now is on putting the game behind us and looking forward to a chance to even the series tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Arkansas catcher Casey Optez had his two-run homer, his third of the season, the bottom of the second to give the Razorbacks a 3-2 advantage. And when that happened, Cody, I was like, there it is. I was like, as soon as that happened, because it's a close game, it's a competitive contest, and when he got up there, and a guy that doesn't hit home runs,
right, it wasn't,
got the home run and gave Arkansas the advantage, and I was like,
I didn't throw the towel in. I didn't throw the towel until the grand slam. It was when the guy hit the grand, a couple innings later or something like that. Somebody hit a grand slam for Arkansas. That's when I was like, all right, well, this was fun. Not really. The thing is, I wonder two questions for me because I didn't watch the whole game. But what I did watch of the game, first question, did Maneri leave Mikhail Hilliard in too long? Second question, why did Maneri leave Threadgill in too long? I mean, I can ask you, did Mikhail stay in too long? Maybe, maybe not. I think he did probably, but maybe not.
Hilliard
did
only lasted three innings.
Yeah, he stayed in too long.
That's a problem. Like that's,
well, he's not a starting pitcher, though, and you have to know that going in. I know you want six innings out of your guy that starts, or maybe at least five. But when
you can, you need at least four, right? You need at least four from a guy that was a starter last year.
But why are you? But you gave the game away pushing for those four innings. You know what I'm saying? But
Threadgill only lasted one.
Yeah, and he should have come out before he came out for a second inning. Like he finished whatever inning it was, the third, and then he came out to start. That should have never happened. I mean, they were just questionable things. Like, even the announcers in the booth, once it got to like 11-1 in the booth, they were starting to say, okay, now you don't want to waste your bullpen. Now you need guys to eat up innings for you and just get through so you don't tear your bullpen up. When it is, you know, 6-2 or whatever the score was, when you're only down by four runs or so, yeah, I'm not okay with just saying, let's just not eat our bullpen up and let's leave a struggling guy out there to save arms for the rest of the weekend when, you know, you can still get back in that game. I agree with that 11-1, but not, you know, 4 or 5-1.
It did feel like after that fourth inning, though, because in the fourth.
Was that the grand slam inning?
That was the Threadgill inning.
Yeah, see, I went to bed after that.
And they gave up six runs in the bottom of the fourth.
Yeah, I think that's the one that did it for me.
And then Beck came out. And he wasn't much better. I mean, he pitched three innings, but he still gave up two more earned runs.
Right.
Once again, the pitching, Hilliard did not have a good start. You bring in Riggs thinking that he's going to kind of stop the bleeding. He does not.
It was his 11th appearance of the year or something like that, so I don't know why you would think he was the guy. But again, Maneri seemed to have already conceded that Friday night game once he had to take Mikhail out that early.
I
don't know. I have questions. No one has answers. Well, Maneri won't answer me.
He should just pick up the phone.
I just texted him too, so he can answer me at his convenience. And he doesn't.
Be like, Paul, hit me up.
Hey, Paul.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Paul.
Happy Friday.
They'll have to get back to work tonight.
I mean, this happened. Was it the Mississippi State series that was the Easter weekend, right, where they played also?
Florida series, too. Remember they played Florida?
And they get trounced on a Friday. Maybe they can come back here and steal, or on a Thursday, excuse me, and steal a Friday, Saturday, because the struggle is real.
Emergency alert, a flash flood warning is now in effect throughout Acadiana until 8:15 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, there's no severe weather, but there's flash flood warnings everywhere.
Avoid flooded areas. The National Weather Service is just sending out.
Very nice.
So please be safe out there. As for LSU, if they make a run in the SEC tournament, they'll have a chance to host a regional. But if they get curb stomped in this series by Arkansas, they're going to fall out of the top 16 projected for a regional, because right now D1 baseball has them as the number 16 host site.
That's probably just because you're LSU. You get that little love and get that number 16 spot.
If the name, yeah, if the name on that jersey read Southeastern Louisiana.
Right, no chance.
They'd be like 24, dude. Right. I mean, let's just be real. Right. LSU's getting some love because they're LSU, and they know right. that'll be a crowd, and they know, oh.
Well, Skip earned that for the program.
Correct. So now if you're LSU, I don't even think your mentality should be, yeah, we got to take the next two and win this series. Absolutely. But bare minimum, you have to avoid the sweep.
Yeah, I think they've reached that, which you should do all season, but I think especially now, because you've lost four in a row and it's getting towards the end of the season and postseason ball's right around the corner, I think you have to stress the one game at a time. And that's what I think didn't happen last night. I think Paul Maneri was thinking about the entire weekend and gave away, so to speak, Friday. Was LSU probably going to lose that game anyways? Yes, Arkansas scored 1,000 runs, you know? But it felt like to me the kids were trying, especially at the plate, and Mikhail Hilliard had an off night. It happens, and it just felt like we didn't go to the guys that maybe could have stopped the bleeding a little better. Maybe Threadgill was great at practice this week or something, and it just didn't translate. And maybe I'm a little off base, but it just didn't seem like they went to the guys that they would go to if Maneri still felt like he had a chance to win.
So, pressure-packed situation tonight. They want to try to win this series and try to turn things around and the four-game losing streak, give themselves a chance to win a series that would help them secure a regional at home. They have to get it done tonight because they are trending in the wrong direction. Once again, as Ron Higgins has pointed out and as a lot of guests have pointed out, this is a team that turns it on for the SEC tournament. And if they knock out the likes of like Ole Miss and Texas A&M and Georgia and all these other ranked teams in the SEC tournament, well, that's going to help them. But as it stands right now, another lopsided defeat, another poor performance, another teams just teeing off on their pitching. That's the third game in the row for that. I mean, the Saturday game against Ole Miss was 5-1, right? Then came the explosion of double-digit runs. That's three games in a row of double-digit runs that LSU's pitching staff has given up. When's the last time you saw that happen for LSU? Stats guy, get on that. Hold on, that's going to be mean, Cody.
The Google machine.
Oh, man. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, be my rant of the week right here on 103.7 The Game. So everyone wants to get rid of Paul Maneri now. Everyone. Everyone says it's time for Paul to go.
That's hyperbole, of course.
Yes, not everyone.
I don't want to deal with the angry phone calls from the guys that don't want to fire him. It's hyperbole.
Got to get rid of him. This is LSU baseball. From time to time, I get pleasure from going to places like tigerdroppings.com to see what the folks are blogging about or message boarding about. And it's always entertaining. And sure enough, there I see the same old, same old. Got to get rid of Paul Maneri. This guy is terrible. We are a dumpster fire. We're LSU baseball, damn it. And I just laugh. Because it's just the rantings and ravings of an absolutely spoiled fan base. Programs have lulls. Programs have bad seasons. I don't care what sport you are. Duke basketball, Coach K has had years where you go, they kind of suck. Nick Saban has had bad years at Alabama. Remember, he lost to ULM in football. Great programs have bad lulls. Great coaches have bad years. Skip Bertman had bad years. Dale Brown had bad years. Even great coaches and great programs have lulls. Is what's happening with the LSU baseball team concerning? Yes. The arm soreness issue, the fact that they don't have a left-handed pitcher on the roster, and the fact that they have a lot of guys that are just not rising to the occasion is an absolute concern, without a doubt. Is there a concern about the lack of what appears to be leadership on this team? Where's your Kramer Robertson type of player that's fiery and will get into his teammates' faces and kind of get things going? Yeah. Not every team has a fiery leader. You can't teach that. That's not something that you can teach during fall ball and go, okay, we're going to teach you how to hit a hanging curveball. We're going to teach you how to execute a double play. And, oh, by the way, player number three, we're going to take you and we're going to show you how to be a fiery leader. It's not how it works. Some guys are natural leaders. Others aren't. Some are quiet. Ask any coach. And sometimes the makeup of your team, the DNA of your team, just doesn't have that. I understand the expectations for LSU baseball. But you do remember that it was 2 years ago. Two. When Paul Maneri was the skipper of the LSU baseball team that won 50-plus games and finished as national runner-up. And if it wasn't for a freak injury to Eric Walker, who you could argue may have been the best pitcher during that run, they would have won the College World Series and not have lost to Florida. The man's won a national championship. I know it was 10 years ago. He's been to five College World Series. He's won one national championship. He's runner-up. He gets the best, some of the best recruiting classes in the country. And y'all want to show him the door. You are already tweeting at the new athletic director to get rid of him. The same LSU fans that sit there and want to support Will Wade and not have him going, y'all want to fire Paul Maneri. Let that wash over you for a second. Oh, we're going to keep Will Wade, and we're going to cut anyone that wants to insult him or come at him national media-wise. But because we lose midweek games and we're struggling as a baseball team, we want to get our national championship winning manager. We want to throw him out, pack up his bags, and put him on a Greyhound bus out of town. Calm down. It's just a bad season. He hasn't had many of those. I think he's built up enough goodwill to earn the right to prove that this is not a trend and that this is just a lull in the program last year and this year. Paul Maneri's earned that right for what he's done here. Do you remember what the program was like with Smoke Laval? Paul has earned the right to prove that this isn't a trend. If we're having the same conversation next year, then yes, get out your pitchforks, your fire, riot, do whatever you want to do to get him out of town. But he's earned the right for that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Daniel Brown from The Athletic going to give us insight about the Golden State Warriors right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. It's time for us to head back out to the Artco Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He covers the Golden State Warriors for The Athletic. It's the one and only Daniel Brown. Daniel, how are you this morning?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you coming on, making some time for us, man. Look, this has been one of the more entertaining series in the NBA playoffs, Warriors, Rockets. It's the one that I would say nationally everyone was had the most anticipation for. It really hasn't let down in that regard. But let's talk about what occurred in Game 5. The Warriors get the win, but Durant suffers an injury. At first glance, people were freaking out. They thought it was an Achilles, but it comes out it's just a calf injury. But he will miss Game 6. What can you tell us about the injury, and how severe do you think it is, and how long do you believe he may be out for?
Yeah, it's a good question, and the one everybody's going to be asking all day, and probably through Game 6, too. I mean, obviously he's such a key part of this franchise and a key part of the title run. You know, it's tough to say just a calf injury. I know that people breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief after learning it wasn't a torn Achilles, but Durant has had this injury before a handful of times in his career, and generally, you know, best-case scenario in those previous times, it's been about a week, and if this is a grade above that, it can be a 3 to 4 week thing. So the question is, if we assume Game 6 is an automatic, Durant is out, it's reasonable to think that Game 7 would be a real long shot, too, just based on his history with his injury. He really was limping. The Warriors have gotten by without him before. Obviously, they won a title in 2015 before he even signed on, but he's become offensively and defensively kind of the world that they all revolve around.
Yeah, it's such a weird situation, Daniel, where this is a championship team with the core, the nucleus that they had, and yet here we are, and with the addition of Durant, back-to-back finals MVP, he's very much become kind of the focal point of the offense. It's an odd thing. We went from Splash Brothers and Draymond Green doing all the dirty work down low and that great bench that they had to KD kind of taking over. And that's a weird thing because you're talking about Steph Curry, who's a league MVP, and you're talking about multiple All-Stars on this team. Are you surprised how that has kind of developed over the course of the past few seasons where it's become kind of Kevin Durant?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. I think the interesting thing about this team is I think that Curry and even Durant, to a large extent, are the types that their egos are such that they allow this sharing. They don't demand to be the man. And if you watch the Warriors over the course of a full season, there are some nights or even some stretches where it's Curry's team, and there's some stretches where it's Clay's night, and they just get him the ball because he's obviously the hot hand. So they've rotated to other guys before, and on any given night, somebody can be their MVP. The compelling thing in this case with Durant injured is Curry's not exactly shooting lights out. He's struggling. I don't know if it's because of the dislocated finger on his non-shooting hand, but he has not been the same guy. And if he were the same guy, you know, they could probably get by without Durant because Curry can just take over his old role as the MVP of the league, you know, the offense. But his shot is off. Last night, in okay game for him because he hit some shots late, but 9 for 23 from the field, 3 of 11 from three-point range. That's not going to cut it in a Game 6 or Game 7 if Durant isn't playing.
Daniel, Curry has been off. Clay has been kind of the man lost in all of this, and yet he stepped up big the other night in that Game 5 victory to give the Warriors a 3-2 series lead. With Durant out, you mentioned Curry, but how important is Clay Thompson to be able to step up and take most of, and if not most, but at least half of the kind of workload scoring-wise for this team?
Right, scoring-wise and also defensively. He's one of the guys that they can assign to Harden, and I think Thompson, Clay really embraces that challenge. He came into the league as a so-so defender, but has emerged as one of the great defenders, one of the great perimeter defenders in the NBA. So Durant's defense is really, you know, Green gets all the attention because he's so ferocious, and I think he's made his bones solely on his defensive presence. But Durant's a big deal on that front. So Clay's, I think, his biggest responsibility will be emerging as kind of the shutdown defender. Clay and all these guys are interesting with the way they handle adversity. It is, you know, after if they have a horrible shooting game, they'll have a great one the next night. If the Warriors suffer a horrible blowout defeat, they bounce back the next night. And they keep saying it, and they keep doing it, but against a Rocket team this good and this hungry, I think this is a flip of the coin the way Game 6 and 7 go, because the Rockets clearly, as we saw especially in those games in Houston, they are ferocious about wanting to end this dynasty. And if Curry and Thompson have one of those off nights, they keep kind of dismissing as, you know, we'll bounce back next time. If they don't do it, there's not going to be a next time. And we're looking at the potential end of one of the NBA's great runs of success.
Dan, tell me, it feels like last year just flipped on its head, because last year the Rockets were in control of that series. Chris Paul gets injured, and if you talk to diehard Rocket fans, they're like, well, that cost us the series. But also Harden did not have great performance in those last two games, Game 6 and Game 7 of last year's Western Conference Finals. Well, here we are, and it's kind of flipped around. Golden State is the team that's up 3-2. They just lost one of their significant pieces who's going to be out with an injury. Do the Rockets have a legit chance of taking the series and winning back-to-back games against this Warriors ball club, even with Durant on the bench?
Yeah, I think no question. The question: can the Rockets win games 6 and 7?
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I think at their best, they really have kind of confounded the Warriors. The Rockets have gotten much better defensively, especially in terms of defending the perimeter, denying Curry the ball, kind of roughing him up on screens. He's such a rhythm shooter. He's such a guy who, if he gets in a hot, he can stay hot for the rest of the 48 minutes. They've been great about making sure he never gets overly comfortable. You know, he can spring loose for a few shots here and there, like he did last night at crunch time, but he hasn't been doing that over the course of a full game. Defensively, they're smarter. I think they are more resilient, because I think the resolve deepens a little bit every time they get knocked out by the Warriors in the playoffs. So if I'm a Warriors fan, I'm a little nervous. I also think that, you know, remember, DeMarcus Cousins also got knocked out in this early in this playoff run with injury, and he hopes to return if the Warriors can extend the run long enough. But losing DeMarcus Cousins and Kevin Durant in the span of a couple weeks is a blow, even for a team as deep as the Warriors.
Daniel, tell me a little bit, what are they going to be doing defensively? Are they going to change anything different? You mentioned that they'll have Klay probably go against Harden and try to lock him down. With Durant out, who can at times be a very good defender, what are they going to do? Is that we're going to see more Andre out there? Or is it going to be more Livingston? What is it going to be?
Yeah, you know, Livingston's kind of struggled a little bit defensively in the series, and I think Iguodala is the guy. They more or less save him for moments like these. His minutes during the regular season are down. They conserve his workload. I think he's 35. Last night he played 33 minutes, played well. He has a knack, as we know from his NBA Finals MVP in 2015, this guy has a knack for this time of year. So I would suspect that Iguodala will get called upon a lot. I'll also be curious to see what they do with Andrew Bogut. He's a possible guy who could come in as the starter as they mix up the lineup. He hasn't played a ton. He's been up and down in terms of his efficiency, but, you know, if they sum it up and, you know, basically say, hey, we're going to saddle you, we're going to ride it, give us the best you've got because this is why you're here, I'd be curious to see what kind of factor he can be in the series, at least as a post-presence, at least as somebody who gives them another seven-footer to at least alter some shots in the key and that kind of thing, because Durant has played that role a lot. So Bogut will probably have to give them more. I'm looking at his minutes last night, and he's not on the sheet. He didn't play at all.
Daniel, appreciate you taking some time out for us. I know you're busy out there on the West Coast, but greatly appreciate you taking some time out and continue the great work that you're doing with The Athletic, my friend.
Okay, thank you so much for having me on.
That was Daniel Brown with The Athletic. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will close out the first hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. Flood watch warning.
Flash
flood warning is still in effect. That'll be in effect until 8:15 throughout Acadiana. So make sure to avoid any low-lying areas on the road, anything like that. Take your time. Do not be that guy or gal who thinks how fun it's going to be to drive fast through the high water, especially if it's a two-lane road and you are going to be dispersing that water off the road onto someone else.
That's a quick science lesson. water that is filling a certain area, when it is replaced with another object, let's say for random instance, like a truck or something, you replace water in one area with a truck, that water then has to go somewhere else. It doesn't just disappear.
That's correct. It just doesn't disappear like magic.
I know 99% of us know that, but that guy doesn't know
that.
There's
always that
one. That guy doesn't know.
Look at me!
Like, 99% of us are like, Cody, you're an idiot. Stop telling me things I already know. No. But think real hard about it. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to that other guy.
Yeah, yeah. You know that other
guy. You know that guy.
You work with that other guy. If you're listening right now, you know, you're like, oh, that's John. Yeah, that's Tim. Yeah, you know that guy. You're thinking to yourself, yeah, I hate that guy, is what you're thinking.
Right, right, right. At 103.7, I think maybe Clint's that guy. He drives the big truck around here.
I'll take that, world famous.
I don't know. No one else here drives a big truck. Clint, I mean, Ben drives a truck, but I think Clint's truck's bigger.
Truck. I used to have a big truck.
I drive 45 minutes to work and like an hour and 10 minutes home from work every day. I drive a car.
I drive a car. Interesting side note, we got rid of my truck because we needed something that was more family friendly because we had our daughter for transportation purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So we traded in my truck for an SUV.
Yeah.
Do you know who drives the SUV?
Well, that would be Miss Tina, huh?
That would be my wife. And I got stuck in the little car, the little Buick car.
Oh, so, don't complain. Shaq can fit in that car. I don't want to hear it.
That was a selling point, to be honest with you, during that campaign. Oh, man.
So tell me why last night I was a little bit surprised checking the bottom ticker while watching the pieces of the LSU game I did watch when they rolled the Sun Belt Conference Tournament scores across the bottom of the screen. Why was I a little surprised when I saw the score to that Cajuns game?
You were surprised because how close it was.
Right, but is there a reason it was that close?
Look, it's the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, so... Look, Texas State is the host, for one.
Okay.
Okay, it's in San Marcos, so they're the host team.
Beautiful
San Marcos. Beautiful, beautiful San Marcos. We'll be receiving that check in the mail any day now from the San Marcos Travel Bureau.
Along with a postcard.
Yes, of just how beautiful it is. I'm sure it's not industrial at all. or just blistering hot. So, Texas State is the host, and look, they're scrapping. They're trying anything they can do to get to a postseason berth. And they did face – look, UL faced a deficit. It was 1-1 to start off with. Texas State jumped up, got a run in the first inning. UL responded. And then Texas State got another run in the top of the fourth. Headed to the bottom of the fourth, they were leading 2-1. But UL stepped up, scored three runs in the bottom frame of the fourth, and was able to hold on for the 4-3 win. UL, four runs on five hits. They committed two errors. That was another role in that. Summer Ellison picked up her 35th win of the year. She only gave up three runs on four hits. So UL did not have their best performance on the diamond, but the Raging Cajun softball team still found a way to win and advance. A wild pitch. It was on a wild pitch that provided Texas State with that lead in the top of the fourth. But then Raina O'Neill drilled a double deep into the left field corner to trigger the uprising for UL in the bottom frame of the fourth. O'Neill scored the tying run on a pass ball. Then Lexi Como. You can read more about Lexi Como right now on the 103.7 The Game blog. Delivered an RBI double, and Courtney Grimion followed with an RBI single. And then they withstood a push by Texas State in the seventh inning. The Cajuns now extend their winning streak to 25 games. Establishing the mark for the second longest win streak in program history and moving within three games of the record 28 that was set back in 2012. It was also the 20th true road win of the season, tying top-ranked Oklahoma for the lead in the nation. Now, they move on, but due to the severe weather that apparently is affecting everyone south of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's a deep cut.
Thank you. The time had to be adjusted for the Raging Cajuns game today on Friday. That will now be played at 12:30. Okay? The weather has altered the schedule for the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. UL will take on, in the winner's bracket final, they'll take on Coastal Carolina on Friday at 12:30 p.m. The Raging Cajuns and the Chanticleers are playing for a spot in Saturday's 1 p.m. championship game. So, congratulations to the Raging Cajuns for gutting out a hard-fought win. there at the Sun Belt Tournament. And once again, anytime it gets to this point, it's going to be difficult, right? You're going to get the best effort from the squads. Texas State also had the advantage, Cody, of having the home crowd behind them. That plays a role in that.
I just wondered if UL had not put out their top guys, if they'd started somebody maybe in the circle that wasn't.
Oh, Jerry Glasgow's going to be starting Summer Ellison every game.
Right. Well, I figured that. I just wondered if, because the score was so close, if that was what had happened. But, I mean, just sounds like Texas State just came to play, put up a hell of a fight, and the Cajuns were able to withstand that, which is what good teams do when you come and you get somebody playing above their level, which kind of sounds like Texas State maybe did yesterday, played above their level
a
little bit.
They played above their level a little
bit. And the Cajuns were able to win. That's all. And when you get to postseason, again, I don't care if you play three innings or if you play seven, as long as you have more runs than the other team.
And look, and they came up with key moments. Julie Rawls beat the throw on an infield single with two outs in the first inning, and that was key to keeping that inning alive, which ended up later scoring a run to tie the game, right? So Courtney Grimion reached base in all three plate appearances, adding two walks to her run-scoring single, which proved to be the winning tally. Kara Grimion, Courtney's older sister, both Grimion sisters received all Sun Belt honors this year, by the way. She laid down a perfect bunt, and then Ellison only allowed the one earned run and struck out six Bobcats in extending her nation-leading win total to 35. She's now tied with Melissa Coronado for second place on the program's single-season wins list. Other tidbits for the UL Raging Cajuns softball team. For the 10th consecutive Sun Belt tournament, the Raging Cajuns advanced into the winner's bracket after the opening contest. Thursday's game also marked the 7th Sun Belt Conference tournament meeting with Texas State. But here's an interesting thing, Cody. It's the first matchup held prior to the winner's bracket play. So, in the past, Texas State and UL always face off in the winner's bracket. UL has improved to 59-9 overall in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. 59-9.
Not bad.
Yeah. Lexi Como and Raina O'Neill extended their hitting streaks to both five games, the longest active on the squad. Lexi Como tied her career high figure and reached 10 doubles for the second straight season. And here's an interesting stat. For the 35th time in 43 starts this season, Summer Ellison limited the opposition to one earned run or less. Since March 22nd, she's allowed more than one earned run only once. Ellison will be on the bump again today. Coastal Carolina, UL softball there in San Marcos, 12:30. Winner heads on to the championship round. So good luck to the Raging Cajun softball team. That'll do it for the first fantastic, fabulous, amazing, exhilarating hour of sports talk radio here on RP3 and Company. Second hour coming up.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks drafted to you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. Just a reminder, flash flood warning is in effect for the majority of Acadiana as the severe weather continues to go through. That's going to be in effect until 8:15 a.m. Once again, school closures across the board. Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Vermilion, Iberian, across the board. Evangeline, all closed. Offices are closed. So make sure to be safe out there. If you don't need to be out in the mess, do not. Just stay at home. Let the storm pass a little bit before you have to get anywhere. Please make sure to be safe out there today. That said, it's time to get back to more sports talk. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our next guest. He covers high school athletics for the Daily Advertiser, and his weekend plans have now been altered greatly because of the severe weather. It's our good friend Eric Narcisse. Eric, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing well, Raymond, man. How are you guys?
We're doing well, trying to stay dry. Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody.
Yeah, everyone's trying to do that. Let's go back to the decision that was made yesterday by the state, Eddie Bonine and company, where they realized early on that they were going to have an issue, and they make the decision to first cancel any games that were supposed to be first pitch after 4 o'clock, and then they make the decision around 6:30 last night, or around 6 o'clock, rather, that they were going ahead and just rescheduling the entire tournament, that they weren't even going to try to bother playing on Thursday night or try to do it on Friday, that they were pushing everything to Sunday for semifinals and then state championships Monday and Tuesday. Your thoughts on the state actually being pretty proactive there and making that decision early instead of waiting until, say, today?
Yeah, I mean, you know, really and truly, they really had no choice. I think the toughest thing was trying to figure out the logistics, partnering up with, McMurray Park, the people who kind of run the park, and coming up with a plan in terms of, hey, look, are we going to have people to be able to help with the field or whatever it is that they needed. I think it was just more of a logistical thing. I'd like to assume that they looked at the weather the week leading up to it, because I did, and it wasn't looking good. So I think the thing that was probably most shocking was that it was, you know, that it took some time to develop a schedule on what they were going to do. But I think that's probably was because they were hoping to still try to maybe, okay, we lose Friday, well, we can still try to do something Saturday. You know, or if we lose Thursday, could we do something on Friday? I don't think they were expecting to have to get, you know, lose Friday and Saturday and then play Sunday and Monday. But I don't know, man. For me, it just seems like when I think back, it seems like this happens quite often. I want to say that the year before I ended up leaving, I want to say there was like this crazy rain delay issues where it's like games are on or games are delayed, and it was just kind of in limbo. So it just seems like this tends to happen a lot.
Eric, as part of that is because it's the time of the year that the tournament's going on. The softball tournament always is always able to avoid it, just barely, right? Because of the time of year that the softball tournament gets in. But it seems like baseball, I've covered the state baseball tournament there in Sulphur as well, and there's always a rain delay. There always is. It's just because that is the time of the year. How much of an impact is this going to have on our Acadiana teams, knowing now that their whole schedule is all thrown out of whack for STM, for Bro Bridge? You know, they were planning on playing on Thursday. They make the travel arrangements, hotel arrangements, everything like that. And now it's like, okay, well, we're not playing today, and now we're going to have to be playing on Sunday. It's Mother's Day. How much of a negative impact do you think this could play a role for not only the Acadiana teams, but for all the teams in the tournament?
I mean, honestly, I think that it shouldn't have a negative impact. If anything, I mean, yeah, it's a little annoying, I guess, you know, and, you know, you have plans that, hey, look, we're going to be home for Mother's Day, or, you know, from that aspect of it, the celebration of the holiday, you know, with moms or coaches with their wives, You know, I guess from that standpoint, it would be, I could see it being frustrating and annoying. But from a baseball standpoint, I don't think there's a negative. In fact, I feel like there's a positive there, which means you have a full arsenal now of your pitching staff because of the extra day's rest. So,
oh, that's a good point.
You know, if you had your ace that wasn't available, maybe that ace is now available. You know, maybe that now you can mix and match some things if you, you know, a little differently now with a full arsenal. Now, the negative to that is so can the other team. So if you were hoping to be able to avoid a pitcher, you know, now you can't avoid a certain pitcher. So I guess from that standpoint, but, you know, when I think of, like, Ascension Episcopal, you know, being able to throw out, I mean, or Brobridge, being able to throw their ace, which they probably would have been able to anyway because of, you know, their last game was like on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, for Brobridge, or Saturday. You know, so I don't really see a negative other than the fact that it just kind of ruins your holiday. So in terms of the Sunday, I mean, you were hoping to be playing on the Saturday anyway if you're Brobridge and STM. So somewhat of your weekend was going to be tied to baseball. But now it's, hey, look, okay, you got to play on Sunday and possibly Tuesday. You know, so I think from a inconvenience standpoint in terms of you thinking, okay, baseball's over with on Saturday, I can see that. But in terms of that, being on the field, I think there's nothing but positives other than the fact that, you know, because of the fact that you can set your pitching staff the way you would like now.
We're talking with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He covers high school athletics. Eric, let's put the weather aside. Let's talk about these matchups. Let's talk a little bit about Brobridge first. This is a team that's usually year in, year out, one of Acadiana's best, but has always kind of struggled of getting over the top and pushing through, so to speak. They have a great chance this time around. They're back in the state semifinals. What do you like about their matchup, and what do you like about this year's team about possibly maybe advancing on to the state championship round?
Well, you know, anytime, you know, I feel like once you get, when you're playing against a 1, 2, or 3 seed, you know, I feel like there's, especially with the way the seeding system works, you know, either one of those teams could have been a 1 seed. So I feel like they should have a good chance. You know, the thing about Brobridge, I think the year of Brobridge might be a real thing. It started with basketball. You know, and I'm going to tell you, I was shocked after they lost the first game of that series against Pearl River to see them come back and win, you know, and then they jump out in game 3 to a big lead, and then they kind of give it back, and they still were able to hang on. You know, it's just, it's something about their pitching, man. They can pitch. The question mark with Brobridge is, are they going to be able to hit enough? And so far this postseason, they have. You know, they've put the bat on the ball. They've scored some runs. And if they're doing that, they're going to be tough to beat because their pitching staff is so good. But the whole key to their team is, will they hit the ball? Will they be able to score some runs? And if they score runs, I don't see why they can't win a state title.
So you think it just comes down because they have such strong pitching, you think if their lineups, if their bats do their job, that you think that they could bring home, they could bring home hardware?
Oh, they will bring home. If they score runs, they win the state title. I mean, their pitching staff and defense is that good.
Let's talk a little bit about STM. You know, Gary Perkins is one of the best in the area. You know that, Eric. He's won multiple state championships. He has his team back in position. They take on St. Charles Catholic in the Division II semifinals. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game Sunday night starting at 6 p.m. Talk a little bit about that matchup and this year's STM team. Is it a different team? You know, back in the day when they won those back-to-back titles, Eric, they had great hitters, you know, guys like Brendan Bro, O'Neill Lockridge, you know, in their lineup that would go on to play D1 college ball. Hogan Harris was a pitcher. Do they have that kind of wealth of talent this time around, or is this year's team a little bit different?
I think it's a mixture. I think that, you know, I think overall as a team that they're talented. Overall, they're a good baseball team. The thing that's most impressive about St. Thomas More is the fact that they don't panic. Like, they lost game 1 of their series against Edie White. They were down 4-0 in game 2 against Edie White. And, you didn't see, I mean, they were the same way. They just, it's like almost like they knew, like, we're going to get it done. They were down 2-0 in game three, and they were like, okay, and come back, and they went 8-4, hit a grand slam, and, you know, they just don't panic. And I think that's probably the best thing about them is that this team just, they believe that they belong. They believe that they're the best team. And no matter, I mean, until they're out of outs, they don't ever think that they're out of it. And I think that's just really and truly the most important thing about them is that you literally have to get, you know, 21 outs against them because they don't panic. You know, it doesn't matter how much they're down. They believe that they're still in the game.
Who else do we have in the area that's trying to win a state championship, Eric?
Well, we have Ascension Episcopal. Northside Christian and Opelousas Catholic are all in all in the state finals in their respective games. They'll be playing on Monday. Out of those three, I've liked Ascension Episcopal all year. I think Ascension Episcopal, Lonnie Landry does a great job, and his coaching staff do a great job. You know, we were laughing the other day and about the fact that they have four head coaches basically, four coaches with head coaching experience. Not necessarily all in baseball, but like they have Jay DiMaggio, former Lafayette High football coach, head football coach. Scott McCullough from Acadiana, and Tim Como from Catholic High New Iberia. So they have a lot of experience on that coaching staff. But, you know, they're a team that, again, they don't panic, and they're talented. Shawn Michael Brady just gets it done, you know. And when I watched them against Holy Savior Menard, you know, their pitching was kind of scuffling, but it was, you could see these guys just like no one panicked. They just, all right, let's weather the storm. You know, let's find a way to just get out of it and minimize the damage to where we don't lose, and we'll fix it. And that's what they did in extra innings, and were able to pull that game out. And then, you know, they went back and forth on Wednesday night, and you know, just they would take a 2-run lead and give it up. So, but all in all, I feel like they have the best chance. You know, Opelousas Catholic and Northside Christian, I think were, to an extent, I guess, maybe not so much Northside Christian, but Opelousas Catholic was a little bit of a surprise. But, you know, they too have been, you know, basketball. They were able to get to the state semis and gave LCA, you know, all they could handle in boys basketball. I think if I had to say who has the best chance, I would say Ascension Episcopal because I like their pitching staff and I like the fact that they're able to swing the bats as well.
Can you tell us a little bit, you know, Opelousas Catholic, you mentioned them, Eric, and we're talking with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He's the high school reporter for that publication. Eric, Opelousas Catholic takes on Ouachita Christian in the Division IV state championship game at 2:30 on Monday. That's traditionally a very good program. Does Opelousas Catholic have what it takes to beat a team like Ouachita Christian this year?
Well, you know, it's baseball, you know, so I feel like especially on this level, you have a chance, you know, long as you create opportunities, and that's simply putting the bat on the ball. If you put the bat on the ball and you're not just striking out, you know, offensively, you put the bat on the ball and make them make plays, you know, I feel like that's half the battle because, you know, speed kills and you're able to force people into errors. I think OC has a chance. I mean, if you'd ask me, hey, do I think they'll be in the – you know, in the state finals. Now, they have a tough chore ahead facing the number one team, you know, the number one seed in Ouachita Christian, but it's one game. You know, the state finals, it's one game. You know, I think the pressure is on Ouachita Christian more than it is on Opelousas Catholic because I don't know how many people are really expecting OC to win. So I think they can, just large in part because of what they've been able to do up to this point. But, again, the key is going to be the simple things, which is – putting the ball in play, forcing the other team to make plays, making them have to get you out, and not making errors. If they put the bat on the ball and they play sound defensively, I don't see why they couldn't be right there with a chance to win it, to pull off the upset.
Eric, appreciate you making time for us, waking up early. Be safe, be dry out there, and enjoy the state championship action and that you're going to be experiencing there Sunday and Monday, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, man. Y'all have a great one. Y'all stay dry.
It's Eric Narcisse, Daily Advertiser, high school athletics reporter breaking down the state championship baseball for us, all the scheduling changes due to the severe weather blanketing the state of Louisiana, and giving his thoughts on STM's chances, Breaux Bridge chances, as well as Opelousas Catholic and Ascension Episcopal. Acadiana well represented at the state championships there in Sulphur. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, I do believe it's time for RPOs with RP3, an enthusiastic edition of that, I do believe, here on 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
Omaha, blue poncho, red poly. Can't think of any more funny. Kardashian. That was one. I remember that one. Let's move on. RPOs with RP3 is now here. Raymond just corpsed me. I'm sad. We've got three topics that I want to cover today. I will throw them at you, my friend.
A trio of topics.
A trio, a trifecta, a triforce, if you're a Legend of Zelda fan.
Oh,
yes, exactly. But I have those topics in front of me. I will then lay them out in front of you, and you will have the option to run, pass, or take the option to wait till later. Hence why we call this RPOs with RP3.
I didn't know how this game was played.
Well, you know, I realized that for last few months, I've just been jumping right into this and asking you questions and assuming that everyone understood what was going on, and that's shame on me because
shame on you.
There's no reason for everyone to just assume they know what we're doing. We should probably tell them what we're doing. And so we're going to start right now with what we're doing. RPO time, Raymond. Let's talk about UFC 237.
Omaha!
It's going down this Saturday. I believe, if I am not mistaken, you yourself, sir, will be at Twin Peaks on Johnston for a little bit of a watch party.
That's correct.
That's going
to
be cool.
From 8 to 10, Twin Peaks on Johnston. They got the 29-degree teeth-chattering beer on tap. Great appetizers, scenic views. You know the drill. Watch party 8 to 10 this Saturday for UFC 237 with yours truly. I do believe the world-famous CD will be making an appearance as well.
Oh, I cannot wait. Well, let's talk about two of the fights on the card there over in Rio. We've got Jared Cannonier taking on Anderson Silva, of course, and then the other Brazilian fighting, Josie, depending on how you know him, Aldo. He's taking on Alexander Volkanovski. Both fights should be very, very good, but I want to know from you, RPO, that the fight of the night will go to Jose Aldo, and get this, you'll love it, the mad Australian. I looked it up. He's from Australia, Volkanovski. He's not Russian. He's from Australia. So do you think, RPO, the fight of the night will be Jose Aldo and the mad Australian, not Cannonier and Silva?
I actually run with that. I think that's probably going to be the best fight on the entire card.
Oh, there you go.
And I say this because the winner of this fight is going to have a chance at Holloway.
Right.
Okay.
We figured that out.
We already figured that out. Aldo's the number one contender. He's a former three-time champion.
Volkanovski's four.
The mad Australian's four. But look, one through four, and if you beat the number one contender,
you're good.
You're going to get a title shot. So I think that's going to be the best. Silva, as much as you love Spider, he's a little over the hill.
Yeah.
I don't see that fight. I see there's going to be lulls in that fight. I could be wrong because UFC does surprise you. But I think the Aldo and the mad Australian fight is maybe the best fight of the entire night.
I think Silva shows up because it's in Brazil. I think he's going to put on his best effort, but we'll see what that actually means. Let's move on, talk some MLB action real quick. Albert Pujols, funny name. He joined the 2,000 RBI club yesterday with what else would he do than hit a home run for his 2,000th RBI? That's such a Pujols thing to do there. He is now officially the third Major League Baseball player to join that 2,000 RBI club. Even though Babe Ruth and one other guy way back when probably have 2,000 RBIs, it just the stat wasn't kept until like the late 20s or something like that.
Correct.
So I want to know from you. Well, let me put it to you this way. The home run ball was hit in the crowd, which means a fan then had the ball, which means if Albert Pujols or if the Hall of Fame or anything is going to get that baseball, the fan has to agree to give it back to them.
They're going to have to pay the fan.
He said no, thank you. He is keeping the baseball. He said he wasn't opposed to it, but I don't think they offered him that much. So since they weren't offering him anything, he kept the ball. RPO, Raymond, should he have kept Albert Pujols' 2,000th RBI ball?
Yes, run all day. If Pujols or Pujols' team or Major League Baseball they wanted, you pony up the money.
Right.
Like, okay, that's the fan. That's a souvenir for the fan. He sits out in the bleachers. He pays that money to sit out in the bleachers. If a home run ball comes his way, it's his to keep.
Okay? Here's what Pujols said when they asked him about it. He said, he can keep it. It's a great memory for him. I mean, we play this game for the fans, and it's a piece of history that he's going to have for the rest of his life. So Pujols agrees with you. His accent was probably worse than mine, though.
But, yeah, I mean, Albert knows the score. The guy's the first ballot Hall of Famer.
I do have one more RPO for you. No surprise here. The weather's terrible outside, Raymond. I'm sure you saw. I cannot stress enough. Please be safe today, all throughout the weekend. Don't be an idiot. If you think you're cool, don't be cool.
Yes.
Be safe. I want to know, though, from you. RPO, Raymond, my wife stayed home from work today. She did not make the trip. She's home. RPO, can I bail a little early today? I would like to go home. I won't take my lunch break. I just want to go home early.
Run if you get all your work done before you have to leave. That's how that works. You get your work done and we cut our promos. You get all that done, you can bail early. Sure.
Thanks, boss. I love RPOs. My favorite segment.
I know it is. When we come back, we're going to keep the good times rolling here on this wet Friday edition of RP3 and Company as we welcome on our boy, Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. Rookie minicamp starts. Barry's going to be covering it. We'll talk about that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. Reminder, flash flood warning is in effect until 8:15 throughout Acadiana. Severe weather is blanketing everywhere. Okay, school closures, Iberia Parish, St. Landry, Evangeline, Lafayette Parish, St. Barden, okay, Acadia. Across the board, offices are closed as well. So if you don't need to be out on the roads, stay at home, man. Just play it safe. Don't be stupid. Don't be cute when you get out on the roads thinking, hey, look at me. I'm going to splash through these puddles with my big truck. Don't do that. Don't be that guy, okay? Or gal, don't be. Just don't be that person. Be safe out there today, okay? By all means. It's time for us now to go out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. Not only somehow he's managed to not only be safe out there, but also to get crunk like no one else that we know. He is a contributor for the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He's our good friend, our boy, Barry Hurstis. Barry, how are you this morning, brother?
Dry for now, but it looks like the stuff you guys got there in Acadiana is heading our way.
Yeah, and they got some more coming out through Texas as well, Barry. So could be an interesting weekend. But let's talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing this weekend. You're going to be covering Saints rookie minicamp down there for Big Easy Magazine, as well as the Saint News Network. Let's start off with the news that came out earlier this week of an undrafted rookie free agent that they did not just invite to camp, to rookie camp, but they went ahead and signed, locked up, the kick returner specialist, punt returning specialist from Assumption College. What do you think about that free agent signing, and do you think that young man's going to have a chance to make the roster?
Very intriguing. Matter of fact, he's one of the players I listed in my article at Big Easy Magazine yesterday morning for some of the players I'll be watching for. Now, I listed five. Obviously, I'm going to be looking at a lot more. I just didn't feel like, I cut it off at five because there's a lot of intriguing guys. Certainly, Deontay Harris is one of them. I mean, think about it. This is a guy who averaged 32 yards per kickoff return and 20 yards per punt return. To me, that's preposterous. I mean, every time he touches the football, you're going to get positive yards. You know, so I mean, you know, if you kick the ball off to the goal line, it's going to be on the 35, maybe the 40. And maybe he takes it to the house. We're talking about a guy who set the NCAA record for returns, combined returns, punt returns for touchdowns, and kickoff returns for touchdowns, 14. That's phenomenal. That's Devin Hester type stuff. The problem is this kid is only 5'6" and 170 pounds. Marginally bigger than I am. And when you see me in person, I'm not that big of a guy. So to think that this guy was able to do all of that, that's phenomenal. Now, I get it. Look, it's Assumption College, you know, Division II school. You know, we're not talking about the SEC per se. We're not talking about the Pac-12. I get it. You know, so I know there's a lot of fans out there that are always skeptical this time of year. And, you know, we hype up so many of these guys and we get excited about them. But this kid can fly. I mean, he can straight up fly. So that's one of the reasons why I listed him as one of the five players to watch. I believe he's still a long shot because to make the NFL at 5'6", 170 is tough enough. But this kid's got the athletic ability that, hey, man, he really could surprise some people. And as I mentioned in the article, don't be shocked if this kid makes the roster. Because as we know, the Saints, probably since, what, the beer man Michael Lewis or I guess maybe Reggie Bush or Darren Sproles, they haven't really had a legitimate kick returner or punt, you know, a guy that's a dual threat at either one. You know, they've never had that. You know, we're talking about Tyrone, you know, you got to go back to the days of Tyrone Hughes and guys like that. So it's been a long time since the Saints had a legitimate threat in the kick return game. So definitely you're going to want to remember the name Deontay Harris.
We're talking with Barry Hursis. He covers the New Orleans Saints for the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. Barry, they invited nearly a dozen players to rookie minicamp. Did not give them a contract. They're not signed. They just got invites to come and try out and just have, you know, extra bodies out there. Any of that group of players intrigues you as someone who could possibly earn themselves an invite to actual training camp and maybe have an outside shot of making the roster?
Maybe Cole, believe it or not, maybe Cole Tracy, the kicker from LSU, just because, you know, Will Lutz really doesn't have any competition. He pretty much has that spot on lockdown, but you always need a little competition in training camp. So it wouldn't shock me if Cole Tracy actually got one of those spots. There's a kid, Kyle Kemp, I believe his name is, played quarterback at Iowa State. He was the guy throwing passes to the Emmanuel Butler kid. So, not Emmanuel Butler. I can't think of his name. I covered so many names during this recent draft that I get them all mixed up now. I even called Saquon Hampton, Saquon Barkley, because now there's more than one Saquon to cover now. But maybe Kyle Kemp would be a name just to remember, just because he's quarterback. And, you know, we're always talking about quarterback because, you know, Saints fans aren't convinced that Bridgewater is quote-unquote the next guy, so to speak. But so that would be a name maybe that would intrigue me. Otherwise, of all the guys that they invited as far as the tryout list, none of them really stand out in my opinion.
Barry, you mentioned that you had five players that you were wanting to kind of watch there. I'd assume Saquon is one of them. Can you break down the five guys that you're intrigued about wanting to see during rookie minicamp this weekend down there in Metairie?
Yeah, well, a lot of it, what I'm really looking for, because, you know, and I've had a few Saints fans mention this to me during the week, you know, what's the big deal about rookie camp? Why are we hyping up rookie camp? All they're doing is going out there and, you know, basically in T-shirts and shorts and a helmet, you know, and shells, as they call it. You know, we're not seeing anything spectacular. Well, and that's true, because a lot of what rookie camp mostly is getting indoctrinated into the NFL, you know, pretty much learning terminology, learning the scheme, learning the playbook and all that. So there's not as much emphasis per se on practice. But nevertheless, that practice that we're going to tomorrow, if nothing else, it gives you an idea of the vision for each player. You know, obviously Eric McCoy is a guy I want to watch because we're saying he's a plug and play guy. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see just how close do they feel? How close do they think Eric McCoy is to being a plug-and-play guy? Will it be a situation where they might let Easton start and then eventually work McCoy into the lineup until he takes over permanently? Or will McCoy, you know, hey, look, it wouldn't shock me if McCoy went out and won the job in training camp as a rookie. It wouldn't be unprecedented, and he's talented enough to do it. But the reason I just want to see, basically, is this kid, you know, is the hype that's on him, is it legitimate hype? And, we have no reason to suspect otherwise. He gave up one sack in 3 years, you know, in the SEC against some of the best interior pass rushers in the country. So that's something, that he can hang his hat on for sure. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I mean, you got this guy in the fourth round. Arguably, this is a guy who easy should have been a high second. I mean, he's that good. I mean, he's a ball hawk. I mean, he's just everywhere. And I am probably more intrigued by him than I am McCoy, just for the simple fact that we all know that there were times maybe last year when Marcus Williams struggled just a little bit. Who's to say? I mean, because we don't know. It's hard to project it this far out. Now, we assume that Von Bell and Marcus Williams would be your two starters. But I'm telling you, I know maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves projecting this, but Chauncey Gardner-Johnson has every bit of talent. It would not stun me, not one bit, to see that kid. I'm not saying he would beat out Marcus Williams for the starting role. I'm just saying don't be surprised if you see Chauncey Gardner-Johnson get a lot of snaps early on in his career.
We're speaking with Barry Herstis of the New Orleans Saints, beat reporter for Big Easy Magazine and the Saints News Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, I know you're a big fan of the Hampton kid out of Rutgers. What are you wanting to see out of him? Yeah, once again, they're just in shells. They're just kind of going through the motions. You're only going to get access to one day. But is there anything that you're wanting to see out of him that would lead you to believe that, hey, maybe he could push one of these guys, whether that's Bell or whether that's Williams?
Yeah, I think so. And again, and I know a lot of fans, that was, and even I question it, why they pick two safeties back-to-back like that? Well, A, yeah, you got a kid like Saquon Hampton who's that highly rated, still sitting on the board. So, you know, best player available theory in that aspect. But, again, we've got to remember, Von Bell, his contract's going to be up at the end of the season, so he'll be a free agent next year. I'm not saying he's leaving, but let's just make the assumption that the Saints aren't able to re-sign Von Bell. Let's say he chases the money. And then you have the same deal that would be coming up with Williams the following year. So if you're the Saints, you got to look at it. You always got to be prepared for the future. The fans get so involved or so immersed or wrapped up in the here and now that they don't think long term. You got to remember, Saints team brass or management, whatever you want to call it, they're always thinking long term. They're thinking a few years ahead. You know, we got Drew Brees is going to be retiring, obviously, here in a couple of years. You know, so you got the quarterbacks. You got all these contracts. You got Michael Thomas, their contract. That's like the big looming thing, you know, on the horizon that you got to take care of. And even Kamara. Kamara's going to be wanting a new deal when his contract expires. So you got all these things that you need to plan for. So while it might seem illogical to draft two safeties back-to-back, you have to understand it from their perspective and how they're viewing it, and not us as fans or me as a writer. You know, you have to be objective and see it from all angles. And to me, that's why this team has been as successful as they have been these last few years, because not only are they good at molding and shaping the current roster, but they always have their eye on the future. And that's what a Bill Belichick does. That's what a Andy Reid does. And you can believe that's what a Sean Payton does. And that's why I believe the Saints will be one of the best teams in the NFL again this year.
Barry, besides covering rookie camp, what are your plans for the rest of this weekend, my friend? I mean, obviously you're going to do your due diligence. You're going to be knocking out articles left and right. Are you going to enjoy your weekend, though? What else you got planned?
I was hoping to go to a barbecue after the practice tomorrow, but looks like all that rain from Houston and Acadiana is headed our way. I fully anticipate that practice will be moved to the indoor facility tomorrow. I will be shocked if we're out there on the field itself based on the weather forecast. So, again, like I said, it's nothing. Saints fans just need to understand this isn't your typical training camp practice where they're going to be grinding it out for 2.5 hours in full pads. I mean, they're just basically going to be playing two-hand touch. The main thing you're looking for, you're looking for the athleticism. You know, obviously, Deontay Harris, he's going to flash, you know, with all that speed. Those type of guys stand out. Another name I want to mention before the segment is over, Porter Gustin. Remember that name. And the reason why I'm so high on this kid is because he can play safety. He can play outside linebacker. And as far as we know, the team's plans for him is to put him as a situational edge rusher. Now, this is a guy who I believe is 6'5", 260, I think. So, you know, if he bulks up, let's say he puts on 10, 15 pounds, there's your defensive end that you didn't have. We know Ziggy Ansah signed with Seattle, so the Saints are out to Ziggy Ansah sweepstakes. You know, so, I mean, if you look at the Saints roster right now, you say to yourself, well, what's the one position they're still lacking? Well, and arguably that would be that they haven't replaced Alex Okafor. Now, Mario Edwards Jr., who they signed in free agency, technically he can play end, although I think they basically told him he was going to play in the interior of the line. But and remember last week we discussed the Granderson kid, Carl Granderson from the University of Wyoming, who I think is another under-the-radar type of guy, but because of all his legal issues with a pending sexual assault charge from an incident he had up there in Wyoming, we don't even know if he's going to play. Now as you and I discussed last week, they gave him a $75,000 guarantee and a $15,000 signing bonus. Now, you're not giving away $90,000 to a guy that you don't think is going to play a single down of football for you. So, and which is why I told you that last week, I believe that the Saints management knows something that we don't. They haven't discussed it yet, and maybe they're not at liberty to do so. But again, you're not giving a guy $90,000 to not play a single snap. So he's an interesting name to watch. But Gustin went to USC. We're talking about an All-American caliber player on defense. That Dennis Allen, man, can you imagine moving this guy around like a chess piece? You know, you can put him in the box as a safety. You can stick him, stick him in the if you deploy three linebackers on a given play. I mean, you could have Anzalone, Demario Davis, and this guy out there, you know, coming in, rotating in and out for A.J. Klein. I mean, there's just so many things you can do with him. The trick or the catch to all of it is this is a guy who's had a very notable injury history. We're talking like an Alex Anzalone-type injury history. He missed, I think, a total of 16 games for USC for what one various injury or another. But when this kid is healthy, when he's on the field, he is a dominant player. So remember that name, Porter Gustin.
Barry, I went ahead and wrote it down, brother, because I'm not going to forget it, my friend. I'm not going to forget it. I'm going to bring it up to you. We're going to talk about it next week, man. We're going to talk about it. Look, Barry, appreciate you making time for us, as always, my friend. Enjoy covering rookie minicamp this weekend. Hope you get some barbecue in somehow, some way. And we'll talk to you next week, brother.
Yes, sir. And all you guys in Acadiana, please be safe this morning. Don't take a chance, just like you heard him say. Stay home if you gotta.
Thank you, Barry. That's Barry Hursis, Saints News Network, Big Easy Magazine contributor. Breaking down Saints rookie minicamp for us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll close out the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Tremendous show so far. Reminder.
I did math wrong. You have a little more time than I said you did.
That's not a problem, Cody. Reminder, flash flood warning is in place for Acadiana until 8:15 a.m.
You just reminded me of the Family Guy joke. Like, what's the weather like outside, Ollie? It gonna rain.
It gonna love it. So please be safe out there. Once again, schools are closed. Offices are closed for multiple parishes. Acadia, St. Landry, Vermilion, Evangeline, St. Martin, Iberia, Lafayette. So
Point Coupee for what it's worth.
Point Coupee for what it's worth. So everyone, please be safe out there. Real quickly, Houston Astros keep winning ball games. They did so last night as they opened up their four-game series against the Tejas Rangers with a 4-2 win. Hard-fought win. Houston Astros are now 23-15 overall on the season. Springer had himself a hell of a game, 3-for-5, the Springer dinger was. And Yuli Gurriel went 2-for-4 as well. Wade Miley, the Louisiana product, former Southeastern Lion star, pitched very well. 6 innings, only 2 hits, 2 earned runs. He struck out 7. He hit his 1,000th career strikeout. So congratulations to the Louisiana product, Wade Miley, for getting the win and hitting that milestone. Astros will be back on tonight right here on our sister station, KVOL, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette, The Rewind. So make sure to check them out tonight. Second hours in the books. Tim Buckley coming up next with from the Daily Advertiser talking Raging Cajuns right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Raging Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the stands, and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve to feel it.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now to welcome on our next guest. He is the longtime UL Sports beat reporter for the Daily Advertiser. You can follow him at TDA Raging Cajuns on Twitter. It's the one and only Tim Buckley. Tim, how are you doing this morning?
I am surviving, Raymond. How are you?
I know the feeling towards the tail end of the week, brother. I know the feeling. I appreciate you making some time out for us. Let's start right off with a little football news before we get into baseball. Had an interesting commitment that occurred earlier this week for the Raging Cajuns when it came to football. Kind of surprisingly, that may throw things, a monkey wrench, into the quarterback race in the fall camp. What can you tell us?
Well, they did get a commitment from Braden Hawkins, the well-traveled Braden Hawkins, who, and don't trust my math because there's a reason I went into journalism, but in any event, I believe it will be going on as maybe 7th school in 5 years or something like that. He is somebody who was at 3 different high schools, his sophomore, junior, and senior years in both South Carolina and North Carolina, and then originally signed with UTEP, went there for about a month or so, and then headed back east and ended up going to Maryland as a blue shirt, ended up red shirting, did not play. And then after all of the craziness and sadness at Maryland, with both, of course, the death of one of their players there, and then all of the related coaching changes, ended up leaving Maryland after the season, and then went to Northwest Mississippi Junior College, where he is now. And initially had planned on playing there this year. But okay. Now he's committed to the Cajuns. And if you're following along on your timeline, says he'll be here June 1st. However, all that being said, no idea yet if he will be eligible to play right away in 2019 or if he'll have to sit out the season because of the NCAA transfer rules. Also don't know when the scholarship will kick in. So whether he's going to end up competing with Levi Lewis and Jayave Magale right away or whether he's going to end up sitting for a year, watching, learning, listening, remains to be seen. So it could be a monkey wrench right now or could be something that plays out down the road.
And what I'm also hearing, Tim, from you is that there's a good possibility that he's here for a cup of coffee and then is on somewhere else.
Well, boy, when you've done that much movement at some point, I would think you want to unpack your suitcase. So maybe this is the place where he does it.
Nice.
Who knows? I mean, there's been a variety of reasons why he's made the moves reportedly. Some for apparent personal and family-related reasons, some for apparent football-related reasons, some for reasons not under his control, some apparently for reasons that arguably he could control. So who knows? I mean, at some point you end up getting so many frequent flyers in mileage that you don't know what to do with them.
We're talking with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. He's the Raging Cajuns beat reporter. Tim, you also confirmed on Thursday that UL has basically finished off the paperwork, so to speak, for a two-game future football series with Eastern Michigan. That sounds like a random team. They're in the MAC, right? What can you tell us about that? And does that seem to be kind of odd to have that kind of series with a team that far across the country, especially if it's not a Power 5 conference?
Well, I'd know because, you know, they got a game coming up at Ohio, also of the MAC. They played at Kent. I remember going there sometime in the last 7-8 years. Couldn't tell you when. So, you know, it's another Group of Five conference. Their scheduling model that some of the conference has kind of proposed or suggested, not necessarily partially enforced, but certainly suggested that its teams follow is, you know, one money game, two games against peer Group of Five conferences, and then, you know, one against maybe one of the local FCS or something of the like. So this would fall into the slot of one of those peer conference games. Yes, it does involve travel. Yes, ideally you'd like to have something much closer, you know, so your fans can travel and whatnot. You know, not that you're talking about tens of thousands of Cajun fans traveling anyway, but you would like it, you know, to be a little bit more convenient. But you know, when this scheduling stuff comes for non-conference games, you know, so much of it is done so far in advance and there's so few openings. And, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And if that means
jumping on a charter plane and flying to somewhere in Michigan or Ohio or somewhere, you know, as one of our friends in the radio business elsewhere might suggest, somewhere, you know, north of the border, out of the country, you know, like all those places in Ohio and Michigan are, then you just go ahead and do it.
Tim, I also want to stay, leave football. I want to go to the hardwood. You had a story that's currently up on theadvertiser.com about a longtime fixture of the Raging Cajuns basketball program, the men's team. Justin Miller has decided to leave the team. What can you tell us?
Justin Miller has decided to leave the team. You are correct, sir. After 3 years here, would have been heading into senior season, started for most of his freshman season and most of his junior season this past season. And, you know, on a semi-related or maybe totally related note, the Cajuns also are going to be adding a sixth signee to the mix, a second one from Daytona State College. Please beg my forgiveness as I butcher his last name and maybe even his first, Dudu Guy from the Senegal.
You did far better than I would, Tim. Congrats.
Well, and I'm just guessing. although D-O-U-D-O-U, I think Dudu is a pretty good guess there, but who knows. In any event, played at Daytona State under Brock Morris, who looks like he's going to be filling the Cajuns' assistant coaching position, vacated when Kevin Johnson headed to Tulane, by the way. That gives the Cajuns, like I said, they had three signings in the fall. They're now up to three for the spring. Assuming that all six come, there needs to be some roster movement. So is that the reason? Is, you know, end of the season meetings and maybe the suggestion of not as much playing time one of the reasons? Perhaps. Those specific details haven't come out yet. Miller did average, you know, more than 25 minutes a game last season. And his minutes have gone up and down. He was 20-plus as a freshman, and then he went down to 13-7, you know, when you had Bryce Washington and Jakeenan Gant eating up all the minutes. And then, you know, you lose Bryce Washington, and his minutes go back up when it's him and Gant as the primary guys in the front court last season. So, you know, what all else may or may not have gone into it, we don't know all of that yet. But in any event, Justin's leaving, you know, a kid who he gave a lot to this program, and he got way more out of himself than I think a lot of people might have thought he was capable of, or a lot of others in his situation would have, because obviously he's not, you know, the most athletic guy in the world, but he played with a ton of heart, and he put up some decent numbers, he moves on. So it sounds like all sorts of changes for the UL basketball team.
We're talking with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. Let's head to baseball, Tim. A big series for the Raging Cajuns as they host Georgia State starting today with a three-game set there at Russo Park. Despite taking 2 of 3 last weekend against Coastal, they still find themselves right now on the outside looking in to get into the Sun Belt Conference tournament with two series remaining. Georgia State's the worst team in the conference. That helps. And then one of the other worst teams in the conferences, of course, is ULM. So they have an opportunity here to kind of take care of business and hopefully punch their ticket to Conway for the conference tournament. That said, what do you expect to see from the Raging Cajuns? Do you expect to see a little bit more consistency from them this weekend, even though they struggle at home hitting the ball?
I don't think they've shown any consistency at all this season, so there's probably no reason to expect it in the second-to-last series of the regular season. So, you know, expect just the opposite, I would imagine. You know, they are in a battle for getting to the conference tournament. Arkansas State is right in that close-to-them mix as well. There's actually a bundle of teams. I think the focus on whether or not they are really going to be in or out
Obviously, we'll know much more about it after things shake out with various series this weekend. But they have not put themselves in a good spot, no question about it. They really have been inconsistent, unpredictable, on the mound, with the bats, everything. They're hitting, like you said, so much better on the road than at home. I feel like a 298 on the road, and don't hold me to it, 250-ish or something like that. At home, the slugging percentage is similarly off kilter. Tony Robichaud spoke at length about potential reasons for it early in the week, and you know, I suppose part of it is the pressure at home, and part of it is that the road parks that they've been out have been arguably more friendly, or hitter friendly, this season. I think maybe the pressure at home part of it plays a bigger part than what Tony was suggesting, but you know, that's all subject to debate. But expect consistency this weekend. That would not be a good suggestion.
Tim, I appreciate you making time for us as always. Glad to see you back out there, brother, and I'll run into you tonight out there at Russo Park. Enjoy your weekend.
Sounds good, Raymond. Take care.
That's Tim Buckley, Daily Advertiser, Raging Cajun's beat writer, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, a little bit more sports talk. I know, you're stunned, because it's a sports talk show. Right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor you hire is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game reminds you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
Jimmy into the lane, hangs on Siaka, banks it up and in. Jimmy Butler with a kiss off the window. 8 seconds to go. Sixes by 13. Raptors ball. Leonard with it. Leonard has it stolen by Jimmy. 3 seconds. A race to the rim. Up. Layup good. Jimmy Butler has scored 4 in a row.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. Well, we're going to get ourselves two Game 7s in the conference semifinals for the NBA playoffs. You just heard Jimmy Butler stepped up in a huge way to help lead the 76ers to a 112-101 win in Game 6 of their Eastern Conference semifinal series with the Toronto Raptors. Game 7 will be on Sunday. Good gut check performance by Jimmy Butler, being the veteran. I know a lot of guys, a lot of people have talked about, well, you know, Jimmy's sometimes difficult to play with. He's a difficult teammate. He's just demanding. And when the moment is big, he makes sure to step up. I mean, he did that. He learned that under Tom Thibodeau there in Chicago. He's developed into that kind of player, and he's the veteran leadership. Look, J.J. Redick is a veteran, but he's like a, you know, he's a three-point shooting guy. And plus, no one's going to be listening to J.J. Redick. I'm just saying. Jimmy Butler, when he talks, it carries a lot more weight on that team. Butler stepped up, played 35 minutes last night. He shot 9 of 18 from the field. paced the 76ers with 25 points. Ben Simmons, former LSU star, had 21 points. Embiid had 17 and 12 rebounds, double-double for him. And Tobias Harris almost had a double-double with 16 points and 9 rebounds. Strong performance from the 76ers to force a Game 7. Kawhi Leonard, meanwhile, he led the Toronto Raptors with 29 points. Kyle Lowry only had 13, and Danny Green only had 8. So Game 7, that'll go back to be in Toronto on Sunday. But that wasn't the only game that's going to be forced a Game 7, a series that'll be going 7 games now. Nuggets Trailblazers, entertaining series if there ever was one. We had Danny Meringue from Trailblazers podcast on yesterday's show talking about how he expected this to go 7 games, and sure enough, it did. Dame Lillard scored 32 points for the Portland Trailblazers to force a Game 7 with the number 2 overall seed in the Western Conference playoffs, the Denver Nuggets. 119-108 victory for the Trailblazers. That will now go 7 games. Game 7 will be on Sunday as well. Dame led the way with 32 points, but McCollum 30. Those two guys. Look, anytime you have two players, especially two guards, that are on the floor at the same time and they can give you 62 points, you have a really good opportunity to win that ballgame. Okay? Because no one else really kind of stepped up for them. I mean, their other starters, Enes Kanter, only had 6 points. They got some love off the bench from Collins, 14 points, and big up to Rodney Hood, 25 points in 32 minutes off the bench for the Trailblazers.
Collins dribbles, gives it back to Hood with 7 to shoot. Top of the key, 3 on the way, got it! Again, Rodney Hood, a playoff career high with 25 points, and the Blazers lead by 14.
I said this on the air, that Rodney Hood is the type of player that the Pelicans should have went after, a scoring wing player that can provide depth. And he was available, they just didn't go get him. He ends up going to Portland. And here's another narrative that has been proven to be highly inaccurate and false. LeBron didn't play with any good players last year. Wrong. 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 Rodney Hood was on that Cavs team. Maybe Rodney Hood was not utilized properly because he's been a key player off the bench and a guy that can also be a spot starter for the Portland Trailblazers. And the Trailblazers are one win away from playing in the Western Conference Finals. Here's another guy that was on that Cavs team that everyone thought was garbage. Oh, it's only LeBron and a bunch of scrubs. George Hill. George Hill is playing significant minutes and contributing for the Milwaukee Bucks, who are, by the way, are already in the Eastern Conference Finals. So two teammates of LeBron James from last year that everyone said was garbage and couldn't play, yet one has helped his team get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and the other one is helping his team when one went away from the Western Conference Finals. So maybe that whole narrative that those Cavs players were hot garbage was inaccurate.
You're talking about Kawhi Leonard. Something cool happened yesterday. As I was getting ready to put the LSU baseball game on, it was on the U. What was on before that was like a throwback game to, I think it was like 2011, and it was San Diego, I believe it was San Diego State, and Gonzaga going at it. I believe it was early in the season. It was Kawhi Leonard versus Kelly Olynyk in college.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I caught like the last minute or so. Kawhi Leonard got the better of an unranked San Diego, taking down, I believe, the 12th ranked Gonzaga team at the time. But it was cool to watch Kawhi Leonard and Kelly Olynyk go at it in college. It was pretty fun.
Kawhi is a...
He looks exactly the same.
He looks exactly
You look at him in college and you're like, he was a man in college. Like, I mean, he looks very similar. But he's better. He's absolutely better.
Also, big up to all the people that said the San Antonio Spurs were going to be a better team without Kawhi Leonard.
Nah.
How's that working out? Spurs were eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. Toronto is one win away from going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Miss Tim Duncan, don't you? Don't you?
Yeah. I love Pop, but maybe we gave the benefit of the doubt to Pop because he had, you know, the big fundamental for 20 years.
The Admiral.
And the Admiral. just saying. Golden State Warriors, Houston Rockets, they'll play tonight. That series Golden State leads that series 3-2. No Kevin Durant for Game 6 and Game 7. Can the Rockets rally and win the series like the Warriors did last year against them? We'll have to find out. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Tyler Nunez will bring us home from Tiger Rag right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the man on the ones and twos, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. Reminder, flash flood warning in effect for the majority of Acadiana until 8. Well, it just wrapped up, but I'm still hearing that it's possibly in effect for some parts of the area. There's also high water now on Ambassador Caffrey around Gilbo, the intersection there. Other parts, KATC, KFY is reporting high water is rising throughout parts of Acadiana. So even though the flash flood warning may no longer be in effect, please be careful out there today.
I think they've extended it. Yeah, they've extended it.
They have extended the flash flood warning.
Until, am I seeing 8 p.m.?
Oh, wow.
I'll double check. We'll have more confirmed on that after the segment here, but I'm sure it'll be extended. We'll look at it.
Once again, schools, offices are closed throughout Acadiana, Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Vermilion, Acadia, Iberia, St. Martin. So please be careful out there on the roads today.
There's river flood warnings until 6:15 tomorrow morning. So if you live near a river, that's not good.
That is not good. Not good. So please be careful out there. If you don't need to be out on the roads, do not. Stay at home. Now it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we close out this jam-packed edition of RP3 and Company, as we typically do on Fridays with our next guest. He covers the men's basketball team, football team, for Tiger Rag. He also, I want to say, is possibly the vice president of the Kevin Owens fan club Baton Rouge chapter. It's the one and only Tyler Nunez. Tyler, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm pretty good. And you're right, I'm a pretty big Kevin Owens fan, so I appreciate that intro.
And that makes two of us, Tyler. Big KO fan myself.
Yeah. Kevin, kill, steam, kill, man. Kill, steam, kill.
Now, that's a deep cut. That's even before WWE. My man Tyler knows what he's talking about.
Oh, we're great. You're going to have Tyler on the 20 by 20 podcast.
That might have to be a thing.
So,
absolutely. Anytime.
There we go. See? Tyler, there was some news concerning the LSU men's basketball team this week, and I want to get to it. As expected, I think, right, both Tremont Waters and Naz Reid will be heading to the 2019 NBA Combine. The league officially announced it on Wednesday in a release. That'll be a total of 66 players doing their workouts there in front of NBA coaches, executives, and scouts up in Chicago. NBA draft lottery occurs on next Tuesday as well. So a lot of stuff going on with the NBA. Not surprised that Waters and Reed got invited to that. Were you surprised, though, that Skylar Mays and Javonte Smart did not get an invite to the G League event that is going on roughly around the same time?
No, not really. I think that there's a ton of people who have kind of put their name in the ring, and I think that the crowd is just a little too heavy for those guys to kind of to elevate to that level. Especially Javonte Smart, he still has a lot of work, and I think Skylar Mays' age probably has a little bit to do with it. I think that both of them are really talented basketball players. I do think that Javonte Smart will get a chance eventually. I just don't think that either of them are really ready yet. So I think both of them will still have pretty good basketball careers ahead of them. Skylar Mays is still planning on being a doctor the last time I kicked, so I don't think he's going to be too heartbroken. But
he has a solid backup plan.
Yeah. Of all the players probably in the field, in the NBA draft field, I would imagine that he probably has the best backup plan of all of them. So, but yeah, there was like a record number of players entering into this NBA draft just because of the way that they can come back, something that's only been available for a few years, and now they can even get agents. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a bummer that those four other guys didn't get the G League Elite invite, but it's good news for LSU fans because it's more likely that they're going to come back.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Tyler, basketball team is also locking up their non-conference schedule for the 2019-20 season. It was announced this week, or reported on rather, that they've locked up a game with Bowling Green for November and then Nicholls State on November. Here is my question when it comes to that. The Nicholls State game being played on November 16th is a lead-in game for the Jamaica Classic, yet the game will not be played in Jamaica. It will be played in Baton Rouge. How devastated were you by that revelation?
I'll probably be fine. LSU's still planning on going to Jamaica. I think it's one of those, like, entry games where they pretend like it's a play-in game, but only one team has a realistic chance of winning. I wasn't going to make it to Jamaica anyway. I don't think we have those kind of funds over at Tiger Rag. I'm excited to get some Southland action. That's my home, man.
Southland strong, brother. Southland strong.
Yeah, 2 years covering McNeese. Me and you went to the Southland Conference Media Days a couple years ago.
That's right.
So anytime I get to watch some Southland action, I'm in.
My man still loves. Always Southland strong. Always Southland strong. Cody's shaking his head. You just don't understand, brother. You don't understand.
No,
Cody.
Line up all day, man.
Oh,
that's where I started school.
No, that's why he's upset.
Oh, that's why he's upset.
I like Lance Guidry a lot, and he's over there now. So he brought Kerry Joseph with him. I think Southeastern's got a pretty good team on their hands.
I would agree with that. Let's talk a little bit about the scheduling, though, and I want to bring this up because for me, who does not have a rooting interest in either school, I don't understand why we can't get LSU and UL to play in basketball. That was such a great environment for the NIT a few years back, and the fan bases, I believe, would love to have that game. And is this just a simple thing of not wanting to play them from your perspective, Tyler, because they've locked up UNO, Northwestern State, and Liberty, and now Nicholls to next year's schedule? They're paying UNO $82,000 to play them. They're paying Northwestern State $85,000 to pay them. Liberty's getting $100,000. This is not a financial thing by any stretch of the imagination. Why can't the Cajuns and the Tigers play on the hardwood? It just makes sense. It's box office. Why can't this happen?
Well, first of all, I don't think the coaches like each other very much. After that NIT game, I mean, there was a lot of heat, and I thought that potentially it could lead to an actual rivalry, but if both coaches are kind of refusing, I mean, I think UL would like to play LSU any time, but Will Wade might not want to mess with that drama. So, especially considering everything else he has going on right now, I can understand that. Also, he does a lot of his scheduling. He has an anonymous guy out west in California that sends him a lot of teams that he thinks are good for scheduling, basically. It's just like the teams that they think they can beat, but also would improve their net rankings. So I think that has some of it to do with it, but I think probably the biggest factor is that the two coaches have beef, and that might not get resolved anytime soon.
Yeah, but as a fan of the game, I would just love to see that, because just the buildup alone – because you know Bob Marlin would be salty, and you know Wade's going to be salty.
Yeah, Wade would be salty, too.
And you know you'd get a crowd there inside the PMAC, and, they're playing the likes of East Tennessee State and, you know, Liberty. That's not moving the needle by any stretch. But if you put the Raging Cajuns and have all their salty fans that are still, you know, peeved about what happened a couple of years ago, man, that's box office, man. That's a game that's going to have some juice. I'd love, even with the animosity between the two, I'd love to see them say, you know what, we may hate each other, we may not care for each other, but let's play this game. I'd love to see it myself. So let's talk a little bit about that schedule, though, because there are some interesting games on there. In November, they're playing at VCU, which is intriguing.
Yep.
Obviously, the Jamaica Classic, which you already mentioned, Tyler, and then at USC, some pretty big road games there.
Yeah, they're playing in Staples, that USC game in the Staples Center, too, so that's really exciting. That's going to be a lot of fun for those guys. And yeah, they did a really good job at the schedule this year. I think, I mean, the fact that these guys are regularly getting invited to, like, good basketball tournaments now is good. Last year's wasn't, you know, the most exciting, but the year prior they were in the Maui Invitational, and now they're in this Jersey Mike's Jamaica. I can't remember the tournament, but they're going to Jamaica. And there's going to be a lot of good teams there, presumably. So, it's a good tournament because people like, I mean, it's a destination people want to go. And then on top of that, they're going to Spain in August to practice for 10 days. So,
yeah, can you can you elaborate a little bit on that, Tyler, how that came to be and why Spain?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Spain is one of the most, like, it's one of the basketball capitals of the world. If you don't know, Spain absolutely loves basketball. That's where the Gasols are from. They've typically got a really good international team, and it's a great nation for basketball. And then the way it came about, once every 4 years, every team is allowed to one overseas trip. And the last one was with they went to Australia and basically toured Ben Simmons around his home country. And this year, I think they spent it a little bit more wisely. They're going to a nation where they can play a lot of really good basketball teams who play a really good European style, and I think that'll. That'll help LSU out, help LSU get prepared, and that's something a lot of teams won't get this season.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Tyler, Christian Dawkins this week, the middleman, aspiring sports business manager, shady character all the way around, and another man were convicted of robbery conspiracy on Wednesday. Does this now, can we now finally move forward from this whole thing? Is this, with this being done, are we now going to be moving forward with the program and putting the corruption trial and everything behind? It does seem that way to me, that this is kind of like, you know, going to be closing the door on that, so to speak. But what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's the end of the federal trial stuff, but now the NCAA's got to get involved. We're starting to see them get involved. They've already sent inquiry to Louisville. They're indicating that they're going to send an inquiry to Arizona, and I wouldn't be surprised if LSU's on their list, especially because now the good news for LSU is the FBI doesn't seem to be as forthcoming as the NCAA thought it would be with the information that they received during their investigation. The NCAA seemed to think that there was a quid pro quo, that if they stayed uninvolved and didn't obstruct the FBI's investigation, that they would get all the all the wiretaps and stuff like that. That doesn't seem to be the case. So they're kind of working with whatever came out during trial and whatever was reported. And it's good for news for LSU because nothing that came out in trial and nothing that was reported provided any hard or corroborating evidence that Will Wade did anything wrong. It's all circumstantial, and I think that's good for LSU, but it also depends on how the NCAA feels about this. They've mishandled some cases recently in the past, most notably with the UNC basketball team. And how they basically got away with murder. So it all depends on how hard the NCAA wants to come down on these programs. And it's really impossible to predict how they're going to react because they're the NCAA and they're one of the most inconsistent organizing bodies I've ever witnessed in my life. But yeah, it's not really over yet. We gotta, especially considering the clauses in both Will Wade's contract, that means he can get fired with cause with just a level one or level two infraction. The NCAA basically sending notice that they think they did. And then on top of that, Woodward gets an extra 2 years on his contract if he fires Will Wade for a violation he committed before Woodward got there. So it's definitely not over, in my opinion.
Speaking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Tyler, we know that Tony Benford, who was the first assistant Will Wade hired when he became head coach, and then he served as interim coach while Will Wade was suspended, he took an assistant job at TCU late last month. Where do we stand on his replacement? Did I miss that?
No, we're still trying to figure it out. It's been kind of tough to report because normally we're able to kind of talk to some people, but everyone's so tight-lipped over there right now. We're kind of relying on public information. So that's a public information request, trying to get information about it, but we still don't know who that assistant is yet. So, no, you didn't miss it. We're just we're biding time and trying to figure it out.
When do you think we'll get to a point where they actually, you know, make this announcement that they have hired another assistant? Because obviously that's a position that they're going to need to fill for recruiting purposes and just for staffing purposes. Would we expect that maybe over the summer? What do you think?
I would hope for their sake sooner rather than later. I mean, I would expect within the next month, it would be pretty unusual, in my opinion, for them to keep that spot open for a super extended period of time. And I think they'll announce it as soon as they officially make a hire. But I would imagine, I mean, probably within the next few weeks, if I had to imagine. I just can't imagine them sitting around waiting to fill that spot, unless they're having trouble filling it. I would imagine that within the next month or so, they should have somebody.
Tyler, appreciate you making time for us, as always. Enjoy the weekend. Try to be safe and dry out there, brother, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
You too. Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag. Also, Kevin Owens, Vice President, Chapter, Baton Rouge Fan Club.
Here's the reason the deep cut, he said, kill Steen, kill. His catchphrase now is fight Owens, fight, because the word kill, I guess, isn't exactly PG. But his actual name is Kevin Steen. It's his real name, and so he wrestled for a long time as Kevin Steen. When he comes to WWE, Vince McMahon needs to own your name.
Okay.
So they asked him to change it. His favorite wrestler growing up was Owen Hart. So Kevin Steen became Kevin Owens.
Nice.
And that's why he's Kevin Owens, because Owen Hart was his favorite wrestler. Also paying homage and respect to probably the biggest tragedy in wrestling history as well. So
I'd say that'd be right.
There's your fun fact, KO fact for the day.
Thank you, Cody Schutz.
He's a real good guy. He's a real, real good wrestler. He's one of those guys with a big beer belly that doesn't look like he should be able to do the things he does. He wrestles in gym shorts and a t-shirt, but what he does is incredible. And then on the mic, he's great too. Canadian, another fun fact.
Real quick, got some news.
Yep, heavy stuff here. I can run through that if you would like, or it's up to you.
Got some road closures. The Scott Police Department has barricaded the following roads due to flooding. Perez/Sunset area between Cameron and Old Spanish Trail, the 700 block of Old Spanish Trail, and Reynold at Roger as well. High water is also being reported at the following locations in the Scott area: Willow at Pecan Grove, Dulles at Hebert,
Dulles
at Hebert, thank you, St. Mary at Roy, the 1,000 block of Stephen, the 700 block of
Rue Bon Secours, is what I'm going to say.
Thank you. The 200 block of Machine Loop, Reiner between Molina and Anna, and Old Spanish Trail at Alford. Reminder, the Scott Police Department wants everyone to know, reminder, do not go around the barricades that have been set up.
They're there for a reason.
They're there for a reason, so please do not go around the barricades.
A second announcement, I don't know if you saw this or not, but it is Friday, so Downtown Alive is a thing that's happening downtown. That has been moved to Inside Rockin' Bowl. So if you were planning on attending Downtown Alive tonight, you can do that, but it'll be inside at Rockin' Bowl. You'll stay dry. It's a good time. I've been to Downtown Alive once before at Rockin' Bowl. It was awesome. Samantha Fish concert. So if you're going to Downtown Alive tonight, Inside Rockin' Bowl is where you need to go.
Perfect. Perfect. Y'all be safe
this
out
weather
there.
Weather is crazy, man.
Weather is insane out there today. We'll keep you posted with anything else as we wrap up the show. After this break, here on 103.7 The Game. Programming reminder. The good brother, Ben Love, will be live from Rufino's on the river in Lafayette tonight from 4 to 6 o'clock. He'll have Ruff and Rodrigue on the air, as well as Notre Dame head coach Louis Cook. So check out the good brother Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Rufino's on the River from 4 to 6. That'll lead you in to LSU pregame, and then first pitch for LSU at Arkansas, game 2 of that series up in Fayetteville. You can listen to Astros tonight if you'd like on our sister station KVOL, the Rewind 97.7 FM, 1330 AM in Lafayette, or 104.1 in Lake Chuck. So make sure to check that out. And also, reminder, because of all the severe weather, the state championships have been pushed back. They're in Sulphur for the state baseball tournament. STM will now play on Sunday night at 6 o'clock. You can listen to STM take on St. Charles Catholic in the Division II state semifinals right here on 103.7 The Game. at 6 o'clock Sunday night. Danny Jones on the call. So please make sure to check that out. Once again, y'all be safe out there today. We have the flood warnings. We have the severe weather. We have high water. We have areas being barricaded out in Scott. Events are being canceled. School is being canceled. So please be careful out there today. You guys have a safe weekend. Have a fun weekend, but make sure to be safe out there. And we will talk to y'all on Monday. That does it.